Hello and welcome to the Eat PhD Team podcast, the podcast here to help you with your relationship with food and body by giving you evidence-based techniques to support yourself with a sprinkling of feminism, a dash of dismantling diet culture and a side of vulnerability as we share our own messy lives with you. I'm Emilia, a registered nutritionist and PhD with the sole purpose of making your life happier and healthier. If you love it, please do go wild and share it. And if you're ready for support with our coaching, details are in the show notes. Hello and welcome to episode number 283 of the ET PhD Team podcast with myself and Anna. Hi Anna, how are you?
Hello, I am swell, thanks. How are you?
I am pretty good, thanks. Pretty good.
Had to give it a bit of a thought.
Yeah, well, I thought, gosh, swell's such a great word, but not swell, but I'm decent, so I'm going to go with that. We wouldn't like to lie, you know? We are nothing but honest. I feel like we should say Happy New Year again, even though, you know, we've said Happy New Year about four times by now. But Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, 2024.
I know. I was writing something earlier and I was like, I was actually writing about a post about, I saw another reel from a PT saying, oh, during your menstrual cycle luteal phase, you'll be weak and you can't be arsed going to the gym and these things. And I'd seen another one of that. So I am, and then I was watching someone's story last night and she was doing the same thing. So I was writing a post about, you know, this many years ago I started telling people that, you know, it that we don't see these reductions in strength for everyone. And I was like, 2 years ago, and I was like, no, 3 years ago, and like, no, 4 years ago. It's 2020. Crikey Mikey, 2020 when I wrote that EIQ lecture. That is wild. 4 years since 2020.
It is 4 years since, well, I mean, let's just ignore the big thing that happened in 20, but EIQ is four.
Yeah, EIQ is four in, I want to say, May.
Wow.
No.
That's crazy.
It is wild. It's wild. We've got lots of new things coming up for it, which is very, very exciting. But yeah, 4 years. Time flies when you're having the best time / when you're getting older.
It is wild right now. Very, very wild.
It is. Do you feel rested?
I do feel rested. I do. It's, quite nice. We were talking about it yesterday, but I'm quite pleased that I've had a week to ease myself back in, because getting back into the swing of work is, well, I don't know if I'm ever truly in the swing of work, but it's taking some getting used to.
I know. I think we said on the mentoring podcast, like, I'm in the swing of calls and check-ins and stuff. Like, I'm really in the responsive place again, and like the connection place again, and I'm buzzing to be back in that. Just in like the, it's for me, it's the connection with people. It's one of the reasons, obviously, that we have ETPHD the way that we do in terms of coaching and mentoring, that we know our clients really well and people that we work with really well, and I'm so buzzing for that. But things like, oh, I need to check my email, so I need to go on Instagram. Like, I took an entire week off Instagram, and it was delightful. And I'm like, oh gosh, yeah, I need to reply to people and DM people back. I'm like, gosh, oh, I love it. I love to DM people. I love to have the conversations. But it is just getting back into the tick boxes of things that you did. Literally, you took a week off, but like the things you did before that, I'm like, oh yeah, no, I'm supposed to do this and I'm supposed to do that. What I do think helpful about breaks, though, is that you do realize how much time you're wasting doing stupid stuff. So like, I was before Christmas, like I was super, super busy and I was working a lot, and I was like, my time was full of stuff. And I don't think that I was a busy idea. I really do think I was doing things that needed to be done. Whereas now I'm like, oh, I feel like those little things that you waste time doing kind of fall away when you take a break, and then you come back and you just focus on like key priorities again, which is quite nice.
Yeah, can very, very much relate. And you know, the sign that you're ready for a break is when I just made a massive, massive mistake on the Friday before Christmas. And I was like, that just cost me an hour or two of work. Like, never mind.
That is extremely upsetting. I'm sorry that happened to you.
It's fine. I treated myself to a pizza and then came back to it.
Oh, you know what I'm really craving at the moment? Fish and chips, like Scottish fish and chips. Really, really. And then so, and I've only eaten fish once in the last 3 years because I'm vegetarian, and that was fish and chips in Edinburgh. And it wasn't that long ago, but now I'm like, that's what I really want, fish and chips and tomato ketchup.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get it anywhere else like it than here, can you?
No, you really can't. I mean, you definitely can't get fish and chips in Austin, that's for sure. Like, I don't even think, I think they just think it was a, oh, yeah, I'm a myth. A myth. Okay, shall we get started on the questions?
Shall I start or do you
Go
want
for
to?
it. Sorry, you start. I'm just like, get started, and I was just sitting silent.
So this one's come up quite a few times. How best to handle all of the diet talk everywhere around me at this time of year? I usually try not to engage as people aren't always ready to be enlightened by ETPHD. It does affect me still, though, as I feel people talking about dieting may judge me when I am seemingly not, though I am quietly and gently working towards fat loss goals.
Don't you think it's interesting that you fear being judged for not dieting as if not dieting is a bad thing? Like, isn't it? For me, I think if I was speaking to people and they weren't talking about diets, I would admire that. Or if they were talking about, not if they were personally dieting, I don't care, everyone can do what they want and good for people who want to diet, like, great. Not that, but if people are talking about dieting, it immediately puts me off. I don't mean, again, I don't mean clients and in work, the workspace. I mean in my personal space. It immediately puts me off of, like, not that I judge anyone for dieting, but I get bored of the conversation, right? So I find that really boring. And it's funny that sometimes we fear being judged for not doing what is effectively like dieting, right? But I wonder if the fear of judgment is coming from it being like not being a social norm. And then there's something in that of like, look at the people you admire, and I admire people who are different. I admire people who are authentic and weird and values driven and like do what is right for them, as opposed to people who look the same, act the same, sound the same, do the same, say the same. Again, I find that really quite boring. So I would look at your relationship with that of like, is it a dieting thing, or is it that you feel like you want to be the same as everyone else? And is that something you admire? I would probably guess it probably isn't. But sometimes we want to be like other people because, you know, when we're teenagers and stuff, like, we want nothing more than to be the same as everyone else and not stand out. And sometimes that can linger a little bit. So I would look at that and think, do you admire the norm, or do you admire people who are a bit different and a bit weird and things like that? And then when it comes to the diet thing, think, is it that I want to be the same as everyone else, or is it that, like, am I fearful of being judged for being different, or am I fearful of being judged for not dieting? Which is kind of a tangent, but I think it's interesting when you were asking that question, like, that's where my head went.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think because it is, like you say, that societal norm that January is the time that everybody starts a diet or kickstarts. Well, I was going to say health and fitness goals, but realistically, it's just dieting goals, isn't it? But what was interesting, like, before we jumped on this, I was finishing off some client updates, and one of the people that I work with was saying how this year she has set herself a fitness goal, but it is because the stuff that she wants to do, and she knows that that's going to support her doing it. And this is the first time it's coming from a place not to change her body. And I think that's what you can hone in on. And maybe that's what you can, saying try not to engage in it, but actually maybe open up that discussion and say what, well, you don't have to say about your personal journey, but focusing on supporting health, and rather than, like we talk about, taking a more inclusive approach to nutrition and talking about all the nutrients that you're getting in, rather than everything that you're cutting out because you've overindulged over Christmas.
Yeah. And I don't know about this person specifically. I don't know who asked this question, but I think sometimes if you're in a larger body, you fear potentially being judged for not dieting because there's maybe some sort of underlying and unwarranted like shame or guilt around your body because of weight bias, weight stigma, internalized weight bias. So the So again, that's something to just be mindful of if you fear being judged for not dieting and you're in a larger body, check in on that weight stigma that maybe you're holding, and we all hold it, and we all have to work collectively to rid ourselves of that. And it's something that we as a team have really been intentional with in the last, 6 years or whatever, of like in especially January, diet, fitness land, there is a lot of hideous weight bias and weight stigma. And it's like this idea of, well, someone's in a larger body, so they should diet. But there, with no understanding of what dieting means to that person, what that person's health journey is like, what their health status is. And it's so interesting to me and quite infuriating that one, that occurs, and two, that it doesn't happen the other way. There's not like, if someone was in a small body, a smaller, relatively smaller body, there wouldn't be any, and they started talking about dieting, people would probably wouldn't have a judgment, or people wouldn't have so much of like present so much of a stigma toward them and their choices, because of this, again, this hideous societal weight stigma that we have. So all the stuff that we're saying is with the kind of acknowledgement of, I suppose, the privilege of being in a societally accepted body, but also with the recognition of, if you are in a larger body, I would just check in on that weight stigma. And I think over time, empowering yourself with understanding, like, there's a book called Fat is a Feminist Issue, which I haven't read the whole thing of, but there's chunks of it that I've read. And like, I think empowering yourself to understand these concepts is can be really quite empowering for these types of conversations. So you can kind of talk confidently about some of that stuff. Okay. Ways to speed up the process of healing my relationship with food. Winky face emoji.
I mean, you can't. If you want, and this isn't a case of wanting to do it properly. I was going to say, if you want to do it properly, you need to take your time and you need to make sure that you're taking, like, doing all of the things. And that is completely true. But I think it's so tough when you have that goal and when you are feeling quite low and dissatisfied and unhappy with how things are at the moment that you want to kind of get through it as quickly as possible. But it's so important that you are taking your time to reflect and explore and work through all of these things. It's almost like if you rush through it, you're putting a band-aid over it, and there might still be stuff that requires a bit of attention. But I do think as well, like, a lot of it is just kind of, again, the lifestyle that we have. We're busy people, we're constantly rushing. And sometimes, actually, there's a lot of enjoyment in just slowing down.
Yeah, and I would say that like a lot of the things that you're doing with, so this is Danai's client, with Danai, in terms of emotional regulation, self-regulation, physical regulation, all of the tools that you're developing, it's not like a calorie deficit. It's not like you do 8 weeks of mindfulness and then it stops and then you maintain it. That's not how that works. And so you're already way on the road to improving your relationship with food. These things don't just automatically stop. Yes, your requirement to surf the urge, or to, do a binge sugar meditation and some of the other tools that we'll use at ETPHD, your requirement on those things or your reliance on those things is going to go down, because eventually you're not going to have that drive to binge as regularly, if ever. But the fundamentals are going to stay the same. So what is it? Why is it that you're so, I'd say, why are you so desperate to get it to the end point? But I do understand that, like, you want to stop binging as quickly as possible. Like, of course, if it's binge eating, or if it's restriction, etc., you want to get to a place of with peace with food as quickly as possible. But I shared something on Instagram. I'm just gonna share, read it out. I shared this 2 days ago. It was from something that Susan David wrote. She said, "Research tells us that people who orient themselves toward the goal of happiness actually experience lower levels of well-being and higher levels of depression, anxiety, and burnout. Like a mirage in the distance, the more we chase happiness, the further it recedes toward the horizon." Now, I know she's talking about happiness here, but I do think it's really important to recognize that, like, this is your life. This is your life, and rushing it away and thinking that the end point is going to just miraculously change everything is a myth, is a mirage. You don't get to the point where you've healed your relationship with food and then your entire life just changes. That being said, as you go through the process of healing your relationship with food, you will find huge parts, huge changes in your life. And I don't know about you, but I've definitely had a lot of messages since the new year of people saying, like, they started this journey with ATPHD and this year's been completely different and their life has been flipped turned upside down since, like, when they started and stuff. So for sure, like, your life does change, but it doesn't change at the end point. It changes now. It changes as soon as you start doing the work, your life begins to change. So try to release the pressure from that end point, because if you put all your weighting on that, it will just feel like it's just getting further and further and further away.
How to support terrible moody PMS with nutrition? I have worse back and hip pain. I'm moody, irritable, my recovery is lower, etc. I understand the hormone cycles, but do you have certain foods or supplements that can support this time of the month? I would like to be less of a demon during this time.
Wouldn't we all, my friend? Wouldn't we all? My ex-boyfriend just used to call it Hell Week and just avoided me for a week every month. He was an ass, but still. So listen to episode 277, because there's an entire podcast episode called PMS Management Guide, which is exactly what you're looking for. And we won't go into it in as much detail as that half-hour episode. Food-wise, avoid anyone that says, like, specific foods are going to help manage your PMS. I think the main things to consider with food is that you might be slightly hungrier because of changes in your BMR, because of changes in hormones that then have an impact on things like ghrelin, and which is a hunger hormone, and CCK, which is a satiety hormone. So your hunger levels might go up. So honoring that and allowing yourself to eat more, allowing yourself to honor the things that you really want, instead of saying, "Oh, I really want chocolate, I'm just going to eat some broccoli," like, that's going to be miserable and it's not going to help your PMS. Allow yourself a couple of squares of chocolate or whatever it is. Oh, I really want chocolate now. At the moment, if I think of a food that I really want, I just then really, really want it. And that's it now. As soon as the podcast finishes, I guarantee I'm going to go and eat the snowman that I've got in the cupboard. It's a bit squash, but still, it's a squash snowman, is still a chocolate snowman. So allowing yourself to honor those things. Supplement wise, there's some evidence for omega-3, zinc, vitamin B6, magnesium, I think. Then the other one is magnesium, and another one is Vitex or chaste berry, which is one that we sometimes recommend with our clients. I would never just blanket recommend anyone takes Vitex or chaste berry without looking at what else, other medications and supplements that they are taking. But that has some evidence around PMS. No one else does. Mindfulness. Sorry, everyone. And vitamin D. Also, I forgot about vitamin D. So listen to that podcast for more on terms of, like, specifics around food and supplements and kind of the mindset behind PMS and what you can do to support yourself. But those are the kind of overarching things I would say.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add, but I was thinking, do you remember when seed cycling was absolutely huge?
Yeah, did you ever try
No, it was one of those things, like, oh, this is going back years, probably before I was even studying nutrition, but lots of girls were doing it. And I was like, is that something I need to do? I don't know.
What's the premise again? The certain types of seeds have impact on, like, your estrogen levels. Is that what it
Certain seeds at different phases of your cycle, and I'm sure there were people that also tied it in with, like, the lunar cycle as well. I'm
course.
sure there was.
Of course. I think remember that like no food is going to have a significant impact on your reproductive hormones, like your estrogen and progesterone. No one food is going to significantly change those hormone levels. If that were the case, we'd probably be in trouble because our bodies would stop functioning the way that they were supposed to function. It's more about managing your symptoms. I think if PMS is really awful, though, I would speak to your doctor. Like, PMS can be really rough sometimes, but it shouldn't be debilitating every month. And so, if it is really bad, then it is worth speaking to your doctor about. Does it matter if something is binge eating or overeating in terms of the solution? Great question, isn't it? Great question, Becca's client who asked this question. I mean, they're all great, but I think what I'll just say is quickly first is the difference between binge eating and overeating is probably a good place to start, in that the key distinction between binge eating and overeating is that binge eating comes with a complete loss of control, whereas overeating you could probably stop if you really had to. That's generally the distinction that is used in research, etc., DSM, in terms of the difference. And then sometimes people think it's the amount of food that you eat. Like, if it's a binge, it's more. If it's overeating, it's less. And that's not the case. And you can actually have subjective binge eating, which is when you have a complete loss of control, but you don't necessarily eat as large or as many calories as one might think would be as a binge. So sometimes people can be really dismissive and be like, you didn't binge, you only ate a bar of chocolate and, you know, three spoons of ice cream. But if that's accompanied by a complete loss of control, then that's what we would classify as binge eating.
I think the where my head was going was kind of overeating, because obviously we often see, kind of when you begin to see improvements in binge eating, you still might have those overeating episodes where there's not those feelings of loss of control, but you're still maybe eating larger quantities of food. But then there is kind of normal overeating, when actually it's just really tasty and I want a little bit more. And yeah, I probably do feel a bit full, but I'm still enjoying it. And in which case, if it's that type of overeating, then no, I wouldn't say anything needs to implement. But if it is kind of overeating still with large quantities of food, then I would say the tools that you use, whether it be binge eating or overeating, remain exactly the same.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think for some people, overeating could just be a habit. So they just get into a habit of eating chocolate every night. Oh, again, straight to the chocolate. And that could be potentially broken by, you know, changing your habits. So some sort of tools to change your behavior, whether it be replacing that chocolate with something else, or deciding, having a bit of a general guideline that after 8 p.m., you only eat chocolate up until 8 p.m. And after that, if you really want it, you go to the shop to buy it instead of having it from your cupboard, or something that's like more of a behavior change. But you could also be mindlessly overeating consistently through the day. And again, it's looking at, okay, well, are you significantly like regulated? Are you regulated nutritionally? So are you eating regularly? Are you eating enough? And then are you stimulated in terms of psychologically? Are you bored? What's food term for you? Whereas with binge eating, what you tend to do, at least initially, although yes, you want to look at the reasons behind the binge eating, often you'll put management strategies in place that are more around like maybe surfing the urge, which you can do with cravings and overeating too, but with binge eating, it's less initially like behavior change stuff and habit based stuff, because it's less co binge eating tends to be less cognitive, and more driven by, like, emotionally driven, somatically driven, etc. So those are the tools that we work with usually whilst we then develop the cognitive understanding of the binge eating. Whereas with overeating, it tends to be a little bit more, sometimes you can think your way out of it. with binge eating, anyone who says it's willpower or you can just think your way out of that is foolish, to put it politely.
Okay, if emotions are blunting your hunger, what is the best approach to a meal? Making something that's easier to get down, like a yogurt smoothie, or focusing more on what your body needs, even if hunger is lower? Or is it just having anything within reason, obviously, that you can actually stomach and will make you feel decent?
Probably a bit of both. The key thing is, if, and it does happen because of where you're, because of how we regulate and understand and listen to our hunger when we're stressed, anxious, emotional, etc., these parts of our brain can become activated, and we find it harder to listen to our hunger and fullness. So amazing that you have the awareness that that happens for you. And my main piece of advice would be to eat regularly, and I would still try to have some of the key non-negotiable guidelines in there. So I would still try to eat regularly with 3 servings of protein. I would still try to have some fruit or vegetables with each meal. But if you're really, really struggling, then adding food volume and fiber might not be the most helpful thing, and actually having a slightly more calorie dense option for you might be a better choice for you. So maybe sometimes you will just say, okay, I'm going to have, and maybe I'll have some 5% or 10% yogurt with some peanut butter and some chocolate sprinkled on top and some blueberries. Amazing, right? That's a bit of a mix of both. So it doesn't have to be black and white, like, is it better to have X or Y? It's just sometimes you will have X, sometimes you'll have Y, and most of the time we probably want to find something in between. Okay. Is there anything other than creatine I can take that has similar benefits? I have tried it in the past and stopped because the way it made me feel. I tried again after starting with ETPHD, but I had to stop after a month. Aside from the water retention, I get a very bloated, painful, and uncomfortable stomach. I've tried a few different types and at a smaller dose.
I mean, you'll be able to answer better in terms of if there's anything else. I don't think there is, but what I would maybe suggest is if you've been experiencing the bloating, is to split the servings and maybe have it twice a day rather than one.
Yeah, I agree. Or having it at night and then go to bed. These things should subside. Very bloated and very painful is not a normal side effect of creatine, in that it's not a common thing. You might feel a little bit bloated initially, but that will subside over time. I remember the first time I took creatine when I started competing, like 2000, probably 2014, and I remember visibly being like, everything immediately felt tight, but I just started weight training properly and I just started taking creatine, and I was like, what the hell is happening? Like, it was like my bra was tight, my sports bra was, everything was tight, and I was like, this can't be normal. That feeling dissipated. It didn't for me for a while because I was in such a huge calorie surplus at that time with the coach that I had the first time I competed. That didn't actually go away for a while, but then eventually it did, it normalized. But I do get that initial reluctant. There isn't an alternative. But if you really don't like it, don't take it. Like, I have phases in my life where I don't take it. I'm not taking it right now, actually. It's not the end of the world. Yes, creatine can be great for certain things, and I do recommend everyone takes it where possible and where it serves them. But there's no, it's not going to make this huge impact on your life if you don't take it. But there is no alternative for it.
Not one for New Year's resolutions. However, what will you achieve or change for the coming year?
My intention, so I like to do like one intention for the year, and I'm not fully gone through my reflections and future focuses yet. It's probably going to be something I'll do this weekend. Last year my intention was courage, and I feel like I managed to pretty much run with that most of the time. This year my intention is to put myself first more and to accept, like, not try and make people like me, and to reduce people pleasing. So I haven't thought of a way to make
What?
this. I I found at the end of last year that I was having some resentment towards certain things, and the resentment was my own fault because I had set a standard based on me trying to make other people happy all the time. And as much as I've learned a lot about people pleasing and trying to not do that, and I'm a lot better at it, I definitely still do it. And I'm at the point of like 37, and I'm like, people are not going to like me. People are not going to like what I say, and people are going to disagree, and that's okay. And I think, especially in our line of work, like talks and events and things like that, sometimes I'll be invited to do events, sometimes I won't be invited to events. And in the past, I would have been like, oh, maybe they didn't like me, maybe I wasn't good enough, maybe I didn't do this if I didn't do a certain event. Whereas now it's like, some people are just not going to like me. Or with work, I put other people's needs often before my own, and then I end up overworking or feeling resentful. Or and I hate resentment. I think resentment is the one of the worst feelings, and it's usually self-inflicted because of unmet expectations, because of people pleasing, because you haven't put boundaries in place. And a lot of my resentment comes from assuming people have the same values, morals, work ethic, etc., as I do, and they don't, and that's okay. But I need to stop trying to pander to everyone else's stuff and just be like, this is what's right for me, this is what's right for my business, my event, my relationship, whatever. And I have to not feel guilty about that. But mine's less about guilt. Mine's more like not being intentional with it in the first place. So then I change my behaviors when I get into a situation because I end up people pleasing on the spot. So for me, that's why it's an intention of always going into a new week or a new event or whatever it may be in my head, being like, people don't have to like you. Like, you know your stuff. Put your needs first. Know what you know. Trust what you know. So that's mine. What's yours?
What's mine? Mine. Well, I know we talked about this at the end of last year, but is this an intention, maybe a word for connection for this year? Like
Ooh.
more spending time with the people that are important to me, and gonna put it out there. Making some new friends as well. Not that there's anything wrong with the friends that I have, but
Love
more
that.
connections is better. So yeah, that's what I'm hoping to achieve, change this year, I think.
I love that. I definitely have noticed that with being in Austin, of I'm kind of like, whenever I've been here before, I'm like, I don't need to make new friends. I make friends with my boyfriend's friends, and I've got my boyfriend, and then I connect with people, my best friends, every day, either on Zoom or on the phone. And I've always been like, oh, I don't really need it. And then certain things, like especially when I took a week off work, I was like, God, I really don't have those strong connections here. And it really does impact you. My best friend came out yesterday for a few days, and I was like, this is the best thing in the entire universe, like that connection. And you don't realize how important it is sometimes until you have had a prolonged time without it, and you're like, oh my gosh, like it's so important. I love that.
Yeah, we had so my like best friends that I've known decades now. We had our annual Christmas meetup, but that's what it is because we're and there's no judgment on anybody else, but we're all in different phases of life and so trying to meet up with everybody whilst we still kind of chat on WhatsApp most days, there's not that in person. And I mean, a lot of that is on me because I've shut myself away and busy doing work and will always prioritize other things ahead of actually just spending time with people. So that's, yeah, we'll see what happens this
Yeah,
year.
we'll report back in July. Becca's client. Sometimes I feel so overwhelmed at the supermarket trying to choose a healthy meal that I feel paralyzed by what is really healthy and what isn't, and all the conflicting information. Then I end up leaving the shop or abandoning the grocery delivery and ordering an unhealthy takeaway instead. I'd like to work on this as I do this regularly, so any advice, welcome.
I mean, I just get overwhelmed at the supermarket full stop. So But and I think this is something like, I don't know about you, but I see all the time is what people's idea of healthy actually is. And you've probably got this idea that healthy is very much kind of maybe low carb, no sugar, no processed foods, low fat, all of these types of things that you'll have seen diet culture thrown at you all of your life. And actually, health is balance. It's a little bit of what you love and lots of nutrient dense foods as well. And I think maybe if you can, and I'm sure you will work through kind of that side of things with Becca, but maybe when it comes to the supermarket, you go in there with a few meal ideas so that it feels a bit less overwhelming and it's okay, I just need to pick up a couple of proteins and some veggies and build some bases rather than going in there without a plan and then feeling completely overwhelmed and just walking out.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really common. Well, I know it's really common in people that I've worked with in the past when people are trying to improve their relationship with food, whether it's coming from a restrictive background or an overeating background. Often we have like these preconceived ideas in our heads, or either based on diet culture or what we used to always eat. You go to the supermarket, you get the same stuff, and you leave. And so as we begin to encourage you through things like exercising your power of choice and taking an inclusive approach to your nutrition and all the other habits and focuses that we'll have, people can sometimes feel overwhelmed because it's like, I've never had to choose between breads before or carb. Like, I would always just get rice, or I would always just get bagel thins. And the choice, you can get that paralysis by analysis of just like, there's just too much, so you just don't have any choice at all. Sometimes what we'll do and encourage is like, okay, well, we're going to try and mix up our carb sources this week. So I'd like you to go in and pick one different bread, and one different rice or something like that, and start to incorporate some variety in initially based on what you already do. Start to slowly increase your variety of these certain types of foods, and over time that will increase and increase and increase, and you're just doing it step by step. So that's one tool that you could possibly use. But like you said, Anna, healthy is not a food. And if you look at nutrition research, one of the reasons a lot of it is flawed is because they try and take a food or a nutrient in isolation and look at the effects of it. And realistically, we just can't do that because that's not how we eat. And one food will impact the other food and the impact that has. And so let's take saturated fats, unsaturated fats, and plasma cholesterol. Like, our cholesterol levels are dependent not on our dietary cholesterol intake. If we eat enough polyunsaturated fat and low enough saturated fat, so it's not like you can just say cholesterol is bad, don't eat cholesterol if you have high cholesterol. That's not how it works. So nutrition works as like a whole, and when we're looking at health, we're looking at what is a healthful dietary pattern, not what is a healthy meal or what is a healthy food. A healthful dietary pattern might look like having protein 3 times a day-ish, lots of plant-based foods, some variety, different spices, different pulses, different grains, different protein sources, if they're accessible for you. If you're vegetarian or vegan, it can get a little bit more difficult. But really looking at that as a whole rather than one food. And I wonder if when you go into the store or you go into deli onto what is it? Yeah, d grocery Deliveroo, you can think, okay, well, overall, what would I like my week to look like? I want to have lots of veggies in there, so I'm just going to pick some veggies. I would really like to have some foods that I've previously restricted in there, so I'm going to add in a little bit of chocolate. Maybe it's pre-packaged chocolate, servings, etc., whatever that looks like. Or previously I've restricted bread, so I'm going to add in a bread this week. And just do it slowly, and you don't have to overhaul your entire diet.
This is a tangent, but there was something, one of the good Netflix documentaries. I've not watched it all the way through yet, but I don't know if you've seen it. It's a study with twins where,
I've seen it advertised, but I've not watched it yet.
and well, this was in the first like couple of minutes where they're taking identical twins and one of them is, well, they've obviously taken it to the extremes. They're like, one of them's going to be kind of continuing with, I guess, what would maybe be classed as not the most healthful diet. And then the other one is a plant-based diet. And I'm like, okay, cool. The plant-based diet is vegan. So that's not really what plant-based is. And then they're obviously doing their training and they're going to be monitoring different health markers. And I was like, really? Like, why are we doing that? Like, it's not even, well, it is quite extreme, but I was like, you're not even getting what plant-based actually is, and that's not a fair comparison.
Yeah,
Like,
you're saying vegan or predominantly, well, I would imagine, I've not seen it, it's predominantly ultra processed foods, I would guess. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, well, then I need to go vegan. It's like, do you need to go vegan or can you incorporate the things that worked really well for the vegan diet, i.e., lots of plant-based foods, as
yeah.
opposed to not eating meat? And again, like, meat is fine. We don't want a huge proportion of our diet to be red meat. We know that. But yeah, it's interesting. I'll have to have a watch of it.
And when it was when they showed a clip of a doctor that frequently is on a Diary of a CEO, I was like, oh, I can't watch this right now.
Was it Hector? Or was it the one who talks about ultra processed foods?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, I don't know his name. I know who you mean though. Okay, your turn.
Oh yeah, it is. Oh, okay. What was your favorite part of Christmas and your favorite present?
Oh, my favorite part of Christmas was being with my family that I don't get to spend tons of time with. To be able to just, I remember, this sounds really quite cringe, right? But I remember I was lying out in the garden on like a sheet thing with my niece. Both of my nieces running around, and at this point, actually, it was my younger niece, and she was. We don't always have a lot of one-on-one time because I have two nieces, and the other niece had gone out. My other niece, who I besotted with them both, but I remember she's kind of grown out of the danger stranger danger phase, and like it's really like immersive. And I remember being like, we were just doing like some sort of game where she was just laughing all the time, and I took a moment and I was like, how cool is this that I can be so immersed in this on a Thursday afternoon or whenever it was, of just, I have nothing to do. I don't feel like I have to reply to people. I haven't exercised today. And I felt so like at ease with just for hours on end, honestly, for hours on end, building Barbie dream houses and making my nieces laugh and having like cuddles. And I felt my favorite part was like the moment where I was like, I'm so grateful. And my brother was there, my sister-in-law, who I'm so close to. And I felt, I'm so grateful that I get to do this and be immersed in it. And that was my favorite part. I think my favorite gift, we don't really do gifts, we do secret Santas. And I didn't really partake hugely in that this year in getting my gift because I was supposed to go home to the UK, and for various reasons I ended up having to stay in the States. And so I didn't even get my secret Santa gift, but I did get lots of chocolate, and I learned how to make tamales. That was a gift. And I did get this beautiful candle, Lavender Fields soy candle, and I've got it by my desk right now, and that's pretty delicious. So we'll go with that. What about you?
I think my favorite part, you know, when you have like those moments of realization where you're like, I have just fully embraced not doing anything. Like, I'm sure you've seen, but the weather in the UK has been horrific. And obviously it would be over Christmas when everyone's got some time off. Could go out and do a little bit more. And I was like, I don't want to. It's miserable and cold. So I'm just going to sit on the sofa and watch films and have a hot chocolate. And it was great. And I could fully do that and just switch off. Like, didn't have my phone, wasn't trying to do other things, wasn't worried about the mess of the house or the dog hair that's everywhere. I was like, no, this is it, and this is great.
Love that.
And I think I did say to this client, my favorite present was I got some yoga passes for a new yoga studio. So I'm very excited to try that.
Ooh.
And the yoga studio is called Moonbeam Yoga, which just sounds right up my street.
Oh my God, that sounds heavenly.
But I did very late find my secret Santa present from one of the coaches on our team, and I used it the other night. It is a I think it's called an eye pillow. It's like a lavender bag, and you can pop it on your over your eyes, and like you can use it in yoga, I'm guessing, for Savasana. But I used it used it the first day I was back at work. After I finished, I just lay on the sofa with it because my eyes were like not used to screens, and it was so nice. So that
Oh,
is all.
that is a great gift from Secret Santa. That was not me. So well done anyone who got that. Do you know what? I did actually get my Secret Santa gift. I did get one Secret Santa gift which was similar to that, and it was like it's a little love heart, and it's like the size of my palm, and it's got like lavender scents and stuff in it, and you can put it in the microwave or you can put it in the freezer for like, and then it's like a soothing tool. So I did love that. Forgot about that. So I feel like our vibes are very similar in the sense of we just love the fact that we could rest and be immersed and do nothing. And also our favorite gifts were one that were involved rest and sensory.
We're in chill girly era.
We are, and I'm here for it. Okay, we're going to leave it there, I think. Thank you so much for your questions. Thank you so much, Anna.
Thanks.
Bye. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, if you did, please do feel free to like, share, subscribe, and review. And if you would like to chat to me, then you can find details of my Instagram in the show notes.